Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Mary Johnson, and joining me on the chancel this morning is our guest speaker, the Reverend Roger Birchhausen. Roger is the Executive Director of the Unitarian Universalist Partner Church Council, now housed at Eden Seminary in Webster Groves, and I'm sure he'll tell you more about the Partner Church Council work during his sermon. Roger was the senior minister of the Fox Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Appleton, Wisconsin, from 1990 to 2015, and he moved to St. Louis in 2015 to follow his wife as she became executive director of Care and Counseling, which is an interfaith counseling program in St. Louis. And Roger's sermon that we'll hear later this morning is entitled, How International Partnership Changes the World. And I welcome Reverend Roger and you into this community of Unitarian Universalists with these words by Andrea Hawkins Camper. In the houses of the holy, the world pauses. In the hearts of the holy, love abides. In the havens of the holy, hope comforts. In the hearths of the holy, spirit refreshes. Come then, one and all, gather in. Come then, one and all, gather here. Bring here all of your heart. Bring here all of your body. Bring here all of your soul. Come then, bring the broken, the vulnerable, the ragged, the outcast, the other. Come then, gather in, come. Come then, one and all, gather in. Come then, gather in. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your green hymnal and put the card in the offering plate or give it to an usher. And we'll then send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the activities and programs going on here at the church. We are glad you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. We have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 5. Turn left through those doors and go to the first room past the foyer. And in front up here, we have a spirit share with quiet activities for all ages. Anyone is invited to go to the spirit share at any time during the service to take an activity back to their seats. And children and young people are encouraged to participate in our religious education program when we bless them and sing them to their classes later in the service. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. I have a few announcements. A gentle reminder that the fragrance-free zone in our sanctuary is the first three pews on my left. If you're sensitive to chemical fragrances found in many personal care products and detergents, you're invited to take your seat in those pews. If you are wearing product fragrances, please don't sit in that designated area. And we ask that you also turn off your cell phones or set them to airplane mode, as the concentration of signals from so many devices cause problems with the sound equipment. And apparently iPhones in particular seem to cause the audio to cut out because they automatically ping the network with some regularity, whatever that means. To give you a heads up about some future things, there will be a Christmas Eve service at 8 p.m. led by Reverend Don Fortune, but we will not be having Sunday services on Christmas Day nor New Year's Day. Another couple announcements. There's a personal care needs shopping list for our fourth Saturday personal care distribution on the display board in the worker room. Please take a list with you, so you'll only have one more Sunday to bring in your contributions. And one other announcement is from Ruth. The Seekers class will end at noon today instead of 12:30. And I believe that's all the announcements. Thank you.
Good morning. Great to be here. We are starting with some chalice lighting words that come from a minister from Burundi, Fulgence Nagijimama, who is in exile from Burundi in Canada. When people meet, endless possibilities emerge. New cultural experiences and openness to new ways of understanding and doing things. A special attention to the other and a sense of service beyond self-development. Today, this morning, let us light this chalice for openness, willingness to grow, enriching curiosity, and active cooperation. And the invocation words come from a Unitarian minister in the Philippines, Tet Gallardo. Ultimate grace, the heart of every matter, in every perfection and imperfection, in all senses and tenses, in moments of every right and wrong, presenting choices to inquiring hearts. You are in the purpose and the journey of mishaps. You are in moments of understanding and misunderstanding. We have but to seek and invoke you and enable the work of your spirit. As prayer is but an articulated common dream, we invoke our ultimate concern for the work of faith. We long to travel hand in hand, creating a world where everyone belongs. Our opening hymn today is number 123, Spirit of Life. And I know sign language to this, at least a version of sign language. So before we get into it, I'd like to teach that to you and invite you, if you feel moved, to not only sing it with words, sing it with signs. Since the words are up there, you won't have to hold a hymnal either. So, spirit looks like smoke coming up. Often that's a symbol of spirit because you sort of can see it, but you sort of can't see it. So, spirit of life, so sort of the life force in the middle here, come unto me. Sing, and if, can you get the words, Kenny, in case I, it's easier to sing and I remember them all, but when I do this, I don't. So then, sing, looks like you're directing, sing. This is the word for in, and if you only pick up one word in this, this is the one because it's in here a lot, in. So sing in my heart, sort of shape the heart there. All, so you're sort of including everybody, all. Stirrings of compassion, a little bit hard in sign language, so we, yeah, I like that. But instead, we do like the sign of the Buddha or Jesus, that sort of sign of blessing. Blow in the wind. Move, pick up something and move, in the hand. And then is it giving, moving the hand, and giving life again. So let me go back. So giving looks like this, which is interesting, isn't it? Because you'd think giving would be this, but it's this. Because guess what? When we give, we receive. So giving life again, shape of justice, looks like the scales of justice. Roots hold me close. Wings looks like a W on your shoulder, wings. And then set me free, it's like you're handcuffed and you're free. Spirit of life, come unto me. So I'll do it up here so you can watch. You can look at the words, multitask, we'll get this done. All right, so I invite you to rise and join in singing and signing.
Thank you.
And I forgot a line too, so good work. Going with the C part. All right. I'm going to invite the children, if you'd like, to come up for the story. And I'm going to sit right here. And you can sit up here if you like. I'd love to see you. All right. We have some brave volunteers. Thank you. Good, good. So this, as you're coming up, I'll tell you a little bit about the story. It is, wow, that looks cool. There's a squishy up here, and there's like a felt spider or some cool thing. All right, so this story is really old. It goes back way, way back in the Jewish tradition in Eastern Europe, back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. There's a children's author named Yuri Shulevitz who put the story into a kid's book form with really cool pictures, but I decided today I would just tell it to you. So the story is about a rabbi, that's like a minister in the Jewish tradition, a rabbi named Isaac. And Isaac lived in a little town in Poland, and that town, he struggled, a lot of people in that town struggled, just to have enough food to eat. Many times, in fact, he would go to bed hungry because he didn't have enough food to eat that day. Well, one night, when he went to bed, he had a dream. And in that dream, he dreamt that he was in the far-off capital city, and that he found the spot where he dug and there was a great treasure. All sorts of gold and coins and silver, and he was never hungry again. Just a dream, he thought in the morning. Then the second night, that next night, he had the same dream again. Again, he thought, it's just a dream. Then he had it the third night, and this time he thought, maybe there's something to this. So he decided to journey to the capital. It was a long way. He had to go through thick woods, up over mountains. Most of the time he walked. Once in a while he got a ride in a horse cart. Well, he finally, after days and days of travel, got to the capital. And the spot where he dreamt that the treasure was, it turned out, was near the palace, the great king's palace. And there was a set of guards that were on that spot where the treasure was, day and night. He kept coming by to see, maybe thinking there'd be an opening where he could dig for that treasure. But the guards were always there. Well, finally, the captain of the guards said to this guy, Isaac, the captain said, "Old man, why are you standing around here day after day? What are you looking for? What do you want?" So Isaac told him about his dream that he had three times. And Isaac said, and the captain of the guard said, "Oh, silly man, why would you go chasing after a dream? Why, I had a dream once that there was a great treasure buried in your town under the stove of the rabbi named Isaac. But I didn't go looking for that." Well, Isaac bowed and thanked the captain for his words and went back through the thick woods and over the mountain, mostly walking, occasionally ride, all the way back to his house. And he went in his house and he got out his shovel, and underneath his stove he dug, and there he found a great treasure. He was never hungry again, and he built a beautiful new synagogue, religious house for his religious community. And he put on the synagogue walls an inscription in gold: "Sometimes one must travel far to find what is near. Sometimes one must travel far to find what is near." He had to travel all the way to the capital city to find what was buried under his stove. So that's the story today. Thank you so much for coming, and I think we're going to sing a song. Thank you.
Margaret Mead wrote, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." We will now take an offering that will go toward helping this committed church make changes in the world. Your gifts will be gratefully received. May they be joyfully given. Please join in reciting the offering blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves, and these are our offerings.
Our reading today is a responsive reading, and it's not going to be up there, so you're going to have to dig out the big hymnal. It's number 568, 568, toward the back of the hymnal. As you're looking, I'll say this is a reading that comes from Marge Piercy, and it is one of my favorite responsive readings in our hymnal. Again, it's number 568. I invite you to join by reading the italicized parts of the reading. Connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground. More than half a tree is spread out in the soil under your feet. Fight persistently as the creeper that brings down the tree. Gnaw in the dark and use the sun to make sugar.
Weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses.
Live a life you can endure. Make love that is loving.
Keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in. A thick and bramble wilderness is the outside, but to us, interconnected, rabbit runs and burrows.
Live as if you like yourself, and it may happen.
Reach out. Keep reaching out. Keep bringing in.
This is how we are going to live for a long time, not always.
For every gardener knows that after the digging, after the planting, after the long season of tending, the harvest comes.
Each week we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows of this community. For things in our heart that we hold in silence, we recognize them by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter or from the bowl here in the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place the stones in the cleansing water of this community. If you have a joy, sorrow, celebration, or struggle you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
I'd like to invite you in a moment to join, as you feel comfortable, in a chant. And we'll chant for a little bit and then have a time of silence. The words of the chant go, "When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love." This is one of the hymns in our in the small hymnal. It's 1009 if you feel like looking. They're pretty easy words. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. My congregation in Appleton began a tradition several years ago during this Advent season to chant this every week during this season as a way to stop ourselves and rest in the midst of all the busyness that is December. So again, feel free to join as you feel comfortable. We'll do this for a while and then have silence. When I breathe in, can you give me this 1009 starting pitch? Okay, I'll tell you what the start, as long as I start in the right place, we'll do better. Oh, there.
1009.
1009.
The green one.
Yeah,
the
green one. Thank you. I just sprung this, so thank you. When I breathe, there, I got it. If you do the starting pitch, that'll help. And, yep. Okay. That's good. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out. Time. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. Amen and blessed be. It's really great to be here. I appreciate the invitation. Thank you, Mary, for all your help getting this put together. I'm really delighted to work with you. Thank you, Nicole, for letting me put you on the spot a moment ago. And I shared with Mary that I came here one time for a meeting, and it was a really bright, sunny day, and I just was knocked out by the beauty of your sanctuary. And it's wonderful to be back. I had been here once before, like at 9 at night, in a dark winter night, just on the outside, and I had all sorts of mysterious thoughts about the building. From that, it was right around Halloween, too. It's a joy to be here. And congratulations on your 180 years of existence. It's incredible. Our faith calls us to do what we can in our lives to help the world become a more just, peaceful, and compassionate place. It's pretty obvious there's plenty to do right around here to help it be more peaceful, just, and compassionate. Across the river in St. Louis, where I live, the intersected problems of racism and poverty, leavened with a flood of guns, continue to shatter too many lives and hopes. I don't know Alton very well, but I'm guessing you've got your fair share of problems here too. So with so much to do right here in Alton, or here in this St. Louis Metro East area, why really bother thinking about Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists across the world? Why should we be concerned with Unitarians in Transylvania or Unitarians in the hills of Northeast India near Bangladesh? Or worried about Unitarian Universalists in a couple of the thousand islands in the Philippines? Now, there may be one reason that we should care, the sense that they need us, that we could save them somehow. And actually, this sense was the main impetus for the birth of the Partner Church movement back in the 1990s. Romania, the home to tens of thousands of Unitarians, had just emerged from the terrible ordeal of Ceausescu's communist rule. The church had been harassed and marginalized in every way imaginable. I've heard a lot of stories about the ways that the church was oppressed by the government, and I was struck this summer by one small way. So I visited the headquarters of the Unitarian Church in Transylvania, and in that building there's a chapel. And around the chapel, there are about 20 statues of some of the important figures in Unitarian history. During the communist rule, the government made the church put a curtain over those statues all around the room, and it was against the law to take that curtain down. Who knew what punishment would befall you if you did? And so, you know, without a doubt, the people of Transylvania, the Unitarians of Transylvania, endured far worse things than that. For example, I saw a village that had been flooded and destroyed by a phony river dam project. The village was destroyed because it had hung on to its Unitarian and Jewish identity. So covering some statues isn't a big deal compared to that. But it's such a symbol of how their rich heritage had been locked away from them, how they could not fully understand or claim their identity as Unitarians. So the Unitarian Church struggled mightily during communism. Perhaps the greatest calamity was losing schools, churches, and other buildings and property without compensation. Now, the overthrow of Ceausescu didn't necessarily mean that everything was going to be hunky-dory for the church after that. There was no guarantee that they would get their seized property back, What property they had managed to keep was generally in disrepair. The years of oppression had also sown deep distrust between people. It's estimated in Romania that 1 in 3 people was a government informant. And the Unitarian Church was not immune to that. So imagine the distrust that that sows in a community. And then finally, the truth remained that the people, the Unitarians in Transylvania, remained really a double minority. They're ethnic Hungarians in Romania, so they're a minority that way. And among the Hungarian community in Romania, they're Unitarians, and the vast majority are Catholics. So even after Ceausescu, they continued to face oppression as Hungarians and within the Hungarian community as Unitarians. So in those years after Ceausescu fell, it's not a stretch at all to say that the Unitarian Church was endangered, that its very existence was endangered in Transylvania. So enter American Unitarian Universalists. We had a sense of the precarious moment of our siblings in faith in Transylvania, and we felt moved to help. And let's face it, there are a few things Americans like more than rushing in like knights in shining armor to save the day. So in we charged, full of good intentions, full of deep love. And I have no doubt that we helped. For one thing, we cared, and that was a huge gift to an oppressed people. We also offered badly needed financial resources. That was especially helpful in bringing up some of the buildings that had decayed so much. I also suspect that more than occasionally, we charged in with what we thought would help, and that's what we did, rather than listen to what our partners thought would help. By virtue of our financial might in particular, we called too many shots. We had too much control. It wasn't a relationship of mutuality and equals. It was a relationship of helpers or saviors and struggling people. And I have to say, in hindsight, the idea that we Americans could save Transylvanian Unitarianism, a faith that has been around for 450 years, mostly with hostile governments, the idea that we could save that ultimately was not true. Transylvanian Unitarianism was saved, but it was saved by the only people who could save it, the Transylvanian Unitarians. We helped, no doubt about that, but it was Transylvanian Unitarians who once again saved their faith. So what I want to say in 2016 is that saving Transylvanian Unitarianism is no longer a viable motivation for partnership. So either we find a different motive for partnership, or we will just walk away from our religious kinfolk in Transylvania and elsewhere. If we choose to walk away, it actually will not be the first time. So there was a big flurry of engagement with Transylvania and American Unitarians in the early 1900s. Not coincidentally on the heels of that sort of imperialistic age when we conquered the Philippines, among other things. We had an expansive understanding of America's role as the savior of the world. So several sister church relationships started between American Unitarian congregations and congregations in Transylvania. But then along came the upheaval of World War and the Great Depression, and most American sister churches quickly forgot about these partnerships. It's interesting to note that in Transylvania, they didn't forget. And I think for the past 25 years, they have wondered if and when we will walk away and forget again. And my fear is that that time is now. There is so much to do here. So what is the connection with some white ethnic Hungarians in Romania? Why would that be so pressing that it take us off working on Black Lives Matter in this country, or indigenous water rights, or all the other problems and challenges we face. And I actually have to say that I think this tendency perhaps to walk away now from international partnerships because of the problems here is actually a strange liberal variation of the America First message of Donald Trump. So why stay engaged with international partnerships with other Unitarian Universalists? And please understand when I ask this question, I'm talking about partnerships that are mutual, that aren't us as superior, other people as inferior, but equal mutual partnerships. Why stay in them? Why work with them in this day and age? I'll give you three reasons. First, partnership can deepen and broaden our Unitarian Universalist faith. So many American UUs have such a shallow knowledge of our faith. When this is the case, our whole faith can't help but be shallow. It's too easily upended. Partnership with a Transylvanian Unitarian Church is a powerful antidote to this too thin understanding of our history. When we engage with our partners in Transylvania, we engage with one of the most important wellsprings of Unitarian faith. So this is precisely what happened with the congregation I served in Appleton, Wisconsin, for 25 years. Now, unlike yours, my congregation was not 180 years old. It was 50, it was 45 years old when I came. And none of us had a very deep sense of the history of our faith or the connections of our faith. And I actually think, not coincidentally, we were largely inconsequential in our community in terms of our actions. Starting in 1999, we encountered those deep roots of Unitarianism through our partnership with a Transylvanian congregation. And we were able then to build a stronger foundation for our faith. And ultimately, we were able to have more of an impact on our community. Partnership with Unitarian Universalist congregations across the world can also help us better understand the breadth of our UU faith. So let's face it, here in the United States, a whole lot of Unitarian Universalists share the same ethnicity, mostly the same economic class, and often the same high level of educational attainment. This simply is not the case in other parts of the world, many other parts of the world, where our faith exists. So an example, my congregation in Appleton. Now, in that congregation, we fit that typical UU demographic, and we partnered with a congregation in the Philippines, and in that partnership, it was a tiny village, subsistence farmers. We figured out that Unitarian Universalism, this faith we shared, could appeal to more than white, middle-class Americans who had been to college. That then helped us have an insight in Appleton that we could grow our faith there. And that's what we did. Sometimes one must travel far to the Philippines to find what is near, that there were people in Appleton we had overlooked who might want to be Unitarian Universalists. The second reason to engage in international partnership is that doing so will enable us to develop more spiritually. Interacting with siblings in faith and recognizing that their faith is shared and yet unique from ours can illuminate us spiritually. It can cause us to question, to deepen, to understand our faith better. Again, an example from Appleton. I estimate that 2/3 of my congregation in Appleton were former Catholics. Many of them had powerful, unresolved issues with their Catholic upbringing. One Christmas several years ago, the minister of our partner church from Transylvania visited. I invited him to lead a Transylvanian-style communion service for one of our Christmas Eve services. And I figured we had four Christmas Eve services, so if people wanted to avoid communion, they had ample opportunity to do so. But to my surprise, a lot of Catholics showed up for that 11 o'clock p.m. communion service. Many of them obviously were compelled by curiosity. I know a few of them came expecting, possibly hoping, to be outraged and angered and disturbed. So, those folks didn't really plan on participating in the communion. Well, much of the Transylvanian communion service looks and feels like a typical Christian communion service, but it is thoroughly Unitarian in its theology. So it focuses on remembering Jesus' teachings. It honors Jesus as a person, not a divine being. And there's no sense of body and blood being present. There's no sense that the main point of the story is God sending his son as a blood sacrifice. So for some of the ex-Catholics, this kind of juxtaposition of the familiar in this ritual with a whole different theology broke something in them. And most of them ended up participating, many with tears in their eyes. They had thought they would never, ever have anything to do with communion again. And in that moment, it was recast. And in a sense, recast their relationship with their Catholic upbringing. It brought a moment of healing and wholeness to them. And it was a gift of partnership. And a final reason to engage in international partnership is that it can actually help us do the work of justice here at home better. Partnership can help us learn how to journey, for example, with marginalized people, journey with rather than lead. So we had to learn this in Appleton in order to get involved in Black Lives Matter in Appleton. We had to swap some of our arrogance for humility. And nothing prepared us to engage in Black Lives Matter better than our international partnerships. Because from these partnerships, we understood how ineffective and wrong it can be to charge in with all the answers instead of walking with. So part of the congregation's mission in Appleton was to be a leader in social justice. And what we figured out in Black Lives Matter, because primarily of our partnership experience, is that leading was going to look a lot like following the lead of African Americans in Appleton and walking with. So fortunately, we had begun to learn how to do that in our partnerships with Transylvania and the Philippines. So those are three reasons to do it. I should add, I think partnership's good for our partners overseas, too. No, it doesn't save them, but they benefit in similar ways that we benefit. So today what I want to do is commend international partnership and engagement to you. I'm director of the UU Partner Church Council. Our work is to facilitate and support relationships between congregations and individuals in North America and in these other places in the world where there are Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists, like India, like the Philippines, like Transylvania. I encourage you to figure out a way to get involved in this. It'll help you deepen your faith, it will help you broaden your faith, it'll help you go deeper into your spirituality, and it will help you do justice work right here in Alton. Now, this partnership work isn't instead of doing Black Lives Matter or other work around here, but it can be a complement to it. So if you are interested in partnership, there are many ways to get involved. One is to become a partner congregation. You may feel like you're too small to do that, and an interim period isn't a great time to do that, and I get all that. But I would lift up that in recent years, we have matched a lot of smaller North American congregations with smaller congregations abroad, and that can be a great combination. It's actually kind of hard to have a 600-member congregation in North America partnered with a 40-member church somewhere else. It's hard to feel mutual that way. So I love it when we're able to match smaller congregations. Another option would be to support an already existing partnership. So, for example, I could imagine this church getting involved in a supportive way with Elliott Chapel's partnership or First Unitarian St. Louis's partnership with a congregation in Transylvania. Another way to get involved is to go on one of our public pilgrimages. And I put some information about a Thanksgiving pilgrimage next fall to Transylvania that's open to the public. I put that on the visitors table, and you're welcome to think about it. It's their Thanksgiving, which is in September, so you don't miss our Thanksgiving. It's a great great opportunity to get to know people, to stay in houses even, to learn and meet our siblings in faith. Another way, I won't hesitate to say this, is to financially support the Partner Church Council. We always welcome that. So today I would like to invite you to consider joining in some way the partnership movement. I believe that our faith needs partnership. I believe the world needs our UU International partnerships. And you may find in your own life that you need it too. That's my hope. Amen. Our closing hymn today is number 318. I invite you to rise as you are able and join in singing. And as Mary extinguishes our chalice, I invite you to join in the unison response. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. The sign of peace in sign language looks like this. And I think that's a fabulous sign for peace, which is that, you know, the world's difficult. Sometimes our lives are difficult. There's struggle, and we strive for that place of serenity. So may each of you today go in peace.